light will light up. I'd like to first acknowledge the Coast Salish territory that we have the opportunity to be on. I think it's very significant to do that. And wherever you are in North America when it comes to indigenous people, you know, I really welcome the whole issue of the resistance that has been organized, and I really thank all of you for coming out today to listen to the I guess the position that we as indigenous people are basically forced into in terms of that 2010 Winter Olympics. The Winter Olympics has really far-reaching, you know, consequences. But I think the resistance that we have shown over the last few days, I think dampened a lot of the enthusiasm that Canada, I think, wished they could have achieved. And it's done through the work of the organizers of this event, through making available to the international media, you know, the media list that a lot of the international media have been accessing people. Some people have been in interviews for hour after hour explaining to the international community the situation which you're hearing part of today. And I'd just like to thank the organizers for being that far-sighted to have put the resistance homepage together and to have put us on the map that way, the international map. I think it's important for Canadians, especially all Canadians, to realize that Canada's human rights record is probably very, very bad compared to what most Canadians think their human rights record is. You know, I know when you have problems or so-called human rights problems in Afghanistan or in Europe, you know, Canadians were proud to get involved in some sort of peacekeeping role. And they kind of think that because of that, their human rights record is spotless and that they do have really no serious human rights problems in this country. But that's not right. And and if you follow the United Nations human rights bodies, which hear periodic reports that Canada is forced to give, especially in relationship to the committee in regard to the elimination of racial discrimination, or the Committee for Civil and Political Rights, or the committee in regards to economic and social cultural rights, these international human rights treaties Canada has signed on to, and they have to report periodic reports to them, and they have to use the data from the Department of Indian Affairs regarding Indian peoples, or they have to report in relationship to the negotiations that happened under the British Columbia Treaty process. And that is what Canada's record is. You know, according to the United Nations Human Development Index, which measures the status of countries and states, Canada was at level three, at level one for 3 years. And it's always at the top level of five, the top five. But when they took that same criterion and applied it to the Department of Indian Affairs statistics regarding indigenous people, we were considered at level 47 You know, so that's the difference. And that's the human rights violation in relationship to indigenous people. You know, we are systemically impoverished by the Indian Act. We're systemically impoverished by the Department of Indian Affairs. Like, how on earth can indigenous people be the poorest people since 1867 and still be that way in 2010? You know, if it isn't systemic. You know, you take a look at a reserve like Musqueam. They can rent out houses to white people and they can invest in those houses. Yet Indian people in their homes. I was up in Mount Currie with the Japanese national television just yesterday. And we went into a home that was no bigger than just this area here. And a man was living there with his baby. And he's a single parent. And that's the home here in 2010. You know, and that's what the Japanese national television wanted to see, was the actual living conditions, not of the chief, but of the people in the community. And that's what they wanted to see. So Canadians need to realize that it is that human rights that Canada has to resolve. You know, they have to realize and take direction from their own constitution. Because the Constitution of Canada says that the federal and the provincial government will recognize and affirm Aboriginal and treaty rights. But we have Aboriginal rights here in the province, but every time we exercise it, whether it be the people in Chiam trying to fish, they're arrested. Or up in Sun Peaks, they're trying to stop the expansion of the Sun Peaks ski resort in order to protect the food in terms of game. They're arrested, you know? Or in Chutuka, Hubie has been staying there since 2000 to stop Senator Nancy Green from building a ski resort up there, you know? And if he wasn't there, they would go in and they'd build a ski resort. And food is really important, traditional food for indigenous people, because of the mass impoverishment of our people. Indian Affairs gives our band members and the Skonnell Indian Reserve and all other reserves $165 a month. You got five kids multiplied by five. And out of that, they need to pay their rent, their telephone, and have to buy their food. You know, and you can't live on that. You know darn well. So they have to hunt. They have to fish. And they have to gather. So it's not just a recreational type of activity. It's a very essential part of their existence as Indigenous people. And that is supposed to be protected under the Canadian Constitution. But the government will not protect it. Stephen Harper won't protect it. That's how come Canadians have to take the responsibility now, because their government is acting illegal. It's the same thing as the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of Canada, and under Justice Lemaire, recognized that Aboriginal title is an Aboriginal right. So we have Aboriginal title under this building, regardless of the fact that it might be considered crown title, regardless of whether it's considered to be a fee simple piece of property that the Wise Hall owns. It's still, because the Supreme Court said that no provincial property right would ever extinguish Aboriginal title. Therefore, the Musqueam, Squamish people have title under here. They should be entitled to part of the taxes. They should be entitled to part of the decision of what other kind of building could be built here. They should be entitled to income tax. They should be entitled to any kind of revenue that's raised on their land, whether it be sales tax, property tax, income tax, you know, whatever kind of, because, you know, we own that land, and it's racially discriminatory against Canada to say, well, Weyerhaeuser owns land, we'll recognize it. If white people own land, we'll recognize it. But if indigenous people own lands, we won't recognize it. And that's where the human rights violation comes in, is there's systemic impoverishment of indigenous people, and there's systemic decisions on the part of the government not to recognize certain constitutionally and judicially recognized proprietary interests of indigenous people. You know, it's indigenous people that have been subsidizing the wealth of Canada, of the provinces, and of the companies, because it is our property that is the fundamental base property that all wealth is generated from. Yet we as indigenous people don't have a share. And it's the Department of Indian Affairs, the Indian Reserve System, the Indian Act that has systemically created the kind of, discrimination, the kind of apartheid to indigenous people, because they don't recognize that we have underlying proprietary interests. And those are things that Canada wants to hide. You know, because of the cost of making real substantive changes, that's what all this window dressing that's going on with regard to the, the four host First Nations. You know, because they're giving out, I wrote an article the other day and I put $10 to $12 million, and I was just throwing that out because I asked somebody about it, but I'm not monitoring it because I know it's all chicken feed to begin with, you know, when you're talking about what the real cost for real substantive change for indigenous people are. But they're throwing it out, the small amount of money, because I seen in on the internet that Musqueam was talking about they were getting 16,000, and the band members were going to go out there and occupy because they were concerned about mold and leaky roofs, you know. And so the thing is that I don't know what it is. It's a little bit of cash. I know up in Mount Currie, the band got a gymnasium and a new band office in terms of the money that they're getting for this thing. But it's really kind of obscure as to what the real money indigenous people are getting, the so-called unprecedented involvement of indigenous people in terms of the Winter Olympics, because the government is also including things like that cultural center they put in Whistler. But that isn't going to mean anything to indigenous people after the games are over. It's going to all accrue to the benefit of Whistler. So you need to be kind of assertive and sort of figuring out what maybe some bands really get. But it doesn't really matter in any way, because what the government is getting in terms of that money they're paying, it's advertisement. You know, the International Olympic Committee sells those five little circles for, you know, millions and millions of dollars to Coca-Cola, you know, to the Royal Bank of Canada, to the CTV, or anybody else that wants that. So that those five little emblems there mean something monetarily to Vancouver and to the Canadian government. And they're selling it off. And they want to make sure that the opening ceremonies, what, day after tomorrow or something, that they want to have some smiling Indian faces in the audience, so that the Olympic Committee, the International Olympic Committee, will be able to realize ongoing profits with regard to the Olympic Games. And that's what they're really after. And I think to a big extent, the four host First Nations actually are getting chipped with the amount of little bit of money that they're getting. But I think, aside from that, we as across Canada's Indigenous people actually don't support it. You know, up in our area, there was resistance against the roadblock, the relay, because there was a lot of concern about the fact that what the Olympic torch relay represented, because it didn't represent anything in terms of benefit for Indigenous people at all. And I think that is where the Canadian government is losing it, because once they start handing out money like that, And once they start waving the flag that the Indians are all happy, a lot of the international media got interested all of a sudden. Because they're not naive. You know, a lot of the European and Japanese media, they can think too, you know. And so I've been talking to, you know, the Finnish, the Dutch, the Japanese, the, you know, all the different international news agencies have been contacting us, and we've been bringing them out to visit some of the indigenous communities locally and showing them the poverty that actually really exists in this country with regard to indigenous people. Because, you know, and they're very interested in seeing it. That's the story they want to tell about Canada. They want to expose Canada back in their home territories as to what it really means in terms of indigenous people in this country. And I think Canadian people have to realize that, you know, this whole deception that's going on here in terms of indigenous people's human rights in this country is the same kind of deception that an athlete who takes steroids, you know, gets involved in terms of winning Olympic gold. And Canada is no different than that athlete. You know, there's no question about it. And I think it's important for Canadians to realize that we're going to have to learn to work together and change the kind of, I guess, government that is violating human rights. Because, and the key point that you need to focus on, I think, is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. A lot of Canadians don't even know that that declaration even exists, you know. But it was an effort of Indigenous people, 370 million Indigenous people around the world who worked over 20 years to get this declaration passed in September of 2007. And only four countries voted against it. Canada, the United States, New Zealand, and Australia were the four countries that voted against it. Australia has changed its position and is going to endorse it. The United States and New Zealand are reconsidering it. The only guy that isn't giving one thought of reconsideration is Stephen Harper. You know? And Canadians should be ashamed of that. And actually the four host First Nations should be ashamed of that, you know, because they're going to stand up there and they're going to stand up there on opening ceremony with this guy, with this redneck prime minister, and they're going to be looking like goose, you know. And that's what we're telling the international media, is that, you know, we're not going to be there. There's guys like Ward, there's people like Billy, and there's people like Carol out there telling the truth about what Canada's human rights record really is on the ground. So what goes on that big stage up there has opened the door for us to be able to make comments down at the local level. And it's important that that message is getting out there internationally. And Canadians have to realize that you have to tell your government that they have to change. You know, the Premier of Ontario wrote a letter to Stephen Harper asking Harper to reconsider the declaration. And he did it because of the efforts of the KI-6. Because the KI-6 went to jail. These are the chief and council of a flying community in northern Ontario who wanted to stop a mine in their area. And they wound up going to jail, sentenced to 6 months, and they got out on appeal, and then the mining company tried to go back in. The chief and a little motorboat stopped the plane from landing. And then the negotiations took off again between Platinex and the Ontario government. And the Ontario government bought out Platinex for $5 million, you know. And at the same time, the Premier of Ontario wrote a letter to McGinty, to Harper, telling him, because of the mining issue in Ontario, and because we need to involve Indigenous people in decision-making regarding these fundamental decisions like mines, we think that you should reconsider this whole issue of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. But all Canadians have to take that kind of position in supporting Indigenous people, because it's only through the acceptance and recognition of that declaration and its implementation are we going to be able to begin, start to move towards some form of reconciliation here amongst Indigenous people and settlers. And that's what we need to work towards as people. And the Olympic Games is providing some of our attention in terms of the resistance, in terms of articulating these hardcore positions, because the decision in relationship to recognition and coexistence with regard to Aboriginal title is just as significant as desegregation in the South was with the blacks, or the removal of apartheid in South Africa. And it's Canadians that are going to have to grow up and become mature and take responsibility and work with us as Indigenous people so that we can find some equality and this country could move ahead. Because a lot of the things in relationship to protecting the land, and I know it's always Indigenous people that wind up protecting the land. You know, I was up in the Supreme Court of Canada watching the Haida when they were trying to protect the last 20% of old growth forest in Haida Gwaii. And they were taking Macmillan Glodell and taking Weyerhaeuser, then taking the BC government and the Canadian government to task. And they were the only ones there. There was no Greenpeace there. There was none of the non-native environmental organizations there. The guys that were putting the bill, the $14 million bill to go to the Supreme Court, were the Haida people themselves. And one of the things that came out of this was that whole question that the province has to deal with consultation and accommodation. To protect what? To protect the ecological biodiversity that everybody, white and brown, depend upon. And it's always the native people that have to take the big companies to court, the big government to court, always the poorest of the poor, people who depend on the trees, depend on the animals, depend on the fish, depend on the medicine, that are doing that. But the benefits are long-reaching and very broad and profound in terms of all our future on this planet. And I think we need to learn to work together. This 2010 Winter Olympics opens our eyes, but let's keep this resistance. Let's keep moving. Cookstown, thank you very much.